have any proof? Linus asked. Alessandro brushed a speck of lint off his knee.
Proof is your problem.
I don't plan on taking him to court.
I know, and that's enough.
I reached out to Lander Morton through an intermediary and offered my condolences.
Lander is a vindictive old buzzard.
The most important person in his life had just been murdered. I knew he would jump on the chance to get revenge.
He hired me.
I imagine he's paying quite well, I said. Alessandro didn't rise to the bait.
Money is of no consequence. I'm here to make sure you don't die.
I'm touched, Prime Segredo, but your protection is not necessary.
Or welcome.
Alessandro turned to Linus.
The contract you had me sign has no expiration date. I'll abide by its provisions. Let me keep her safe.
Linus pondered it. No, absolutely not.
Work with him,
Linus said. The betrayal stung. I had 3 seconds to pick an emotion. I could storm off angry, which would be childish. I could refuse and show everyone just how deep Alessandro had hurt me. Or I could swallow my feelings, act like it didn't matter, and be professional about it.
Is that an order?
I kept my voice casual.
Does it have to be?
Linus asked. He shares no information unless his arm is twisted, which makes him unpredictable, and he's driven by self-interest, which makes him a liability. He has no loyalty, he can't be counted on, and his principles are murky. I have no problem working with him, but I want my objection noted, so when he cuts and runs at the worst moment, I can tell you, I told you so. And I would really rub it in.
I told you before that I would see things through, Alessandro said. I kept my promise, and I'll do it again. When I sign on the dotted line, I always deliver.
I shrugged.
You do remember what betraying the trust of the National Assembly of the United States means,
Linus said.
There is no place on this planet where we won't find you. I haven't forgotten, Alessandro said.
Linus smiled again, showing even white teeth.
See? He knows the consequences.
He clapped his hands together.
It's settled. You will investigate. He will protect you. And everything will come up roses. Moving on.
This was some kind of nightmare. Not only did Alessandro reappear in my life, now I had to work with him. He would insist on following me everywhere. We would be around each other all the time. I would rather walk on broken glass all day than spend 15 minutes talking to him.
I had picked my path. I swore an oath to the wardens.
Like Mom said, it was time to put up or shut up. I wrestled my mind back to the problem at hand. There would be time to vent all of this later.
You don't know who Archon sent?
No.
Alessandro said.
Do you think he is behind the 2 attacks?
Unlikely. Archon's people are precise and fast. This was stupid.
As much as I hated to admit it, he was right.
Agreed. First, they attacked Linus in his home where he is the strongest. Second, they attacked both of us and simultaneously. It wasn't just an assault on 2 primes. It was an assault on the office of the warden. All of this guarantees that we will drop everything and investigate. Why?
That's what you'll need to find out.
Linus leaned forward.
The recovery of the serum is your first priority. Get in and shake them up until it falls out. Get me the evidence I need to force my way in. Don't die.
He looked at me and said, enunciating every word,
Do me this favor, Catalina.
Of course, Mr. Duncan. We went through this ritual with every assignment. I called it Victoria Tremaine's Insurance.
Linus nodded at Alessandro.
Wait outside. She'll be along shortly.
Alessandro rose from the chair with that liquid grace and walked out. I waited until he'd had time to reach the front door.
How could you? I know it hurts. I know you're angry. He's an arrogant jackass, but he is very, very good at what he does. Your survival matters to me a great deal more than your feelings.
Anybody but him. I could have taken Pete.
Linus raised his eyebrows and pointed at the unconscious Pete with his thumb.
He would be difficult to carry.
My feelings must have shown on my face, because Linus sat back.
Do you understand why I can't take this over now?
You have no justification. The office of the warden can't just run over the private affairs of Primes. The houses would scream bloody murder.
Linus nodded.
I have a lot of things to verify. If what that hotshot said is true, I have to cover a lot of ground. I may not be available to provide assistance.
I'm not sure I can count on Alessandro to provide it either.
Linus steepled his fingers.
You've had a chance to observe him here. Tell me what's different about him from the Alessandro you remember.
I ran through the last 20 minutes in my head. He didn't challenge you. You gave him multiple chances to mouth off, but he didn't take them. No, Alessandro was in full artisan mode. Ice cold, calculating, resolute.
What else?
He offered information without being prompted. That was new as well. The last time we met, I had to pull every bit of intelligence out of him with tweezers, even when our lives depended on it.
Something must have happened to him, Linus said. I suspect it was extremely unpleasant. I like his determination. It's a welcome change.
I gave up. How dangerous is Archon?
Dangerous enough that the Imperial Department of Defense let him go rather than kill him, which is their usual procedure. It was judged to be more cost-effective.
Wow. He gave the Russian Imperium pause?
Yes. The man is a mass murderer, Catalina. He has a black tag. Just him alone.
In the Warden Network, potential threats were tagged with different colors, from low to high. Black indicated the highest level, critical. It was usually reserved for criminal organizations and small governments rather than individuals. Even my brother-in-law, who could level an entire city once he got going, was marked as brown.
One wonders how much easier our lives would be if the Russian Imperium had collapsed during the farmer revolt.
Linus opened a drawer of his desk, took out a large box, and held it out to me.
I'm throwing you into a den of wolves. The least I can do is give you a stick to hold them at bay.
Thank you. I took my present. Made of polished cedar, it was about 2.5 feet long. A stylized tree branch with 5 leaves was carved into the lid, wrapped in a ribbon of Norse runes. It's beautiful.
This is a prototype, with all the issues that entails. I planned to refine it, but we have no time.
I opened the box. Inside, on turquoise velvet, lay a short sword. It was a straightforward weapon. Almost plain, about 14 inches overall, with a 10-inch double-edged blade, and a wooden grip wrapped in a leather cord. Both the simple crossguard and the round pommel shimmered with blued steel, catching the light. The blade seemed unusually wide for the length, about 48 millimeters at least. Aw, he made me a sword,
never made swords. He specialized in projectile weapons. I set the box on his desk and plucked the weapon out. Heavy. And weighted oddly, most of the mass at the hilt. This wasn't a functional sword, more like a decorative sword-shaped object you would hang on the wall. It didn't matter. It wasn't a very good sword, but he'd made it specially for me. I love it, I said. Nobody had ever made me a sword before. Linus sighed.
Flick it.
What?
Stand up and wave it around.
I got up and sliced through the air. The blade unfolded like a telescopic pole, and I almost dropped it. The new sword was 30 inches long. I raised the sword and studied the blade. Logic said there should have been lines between the segments, but I couldn't find any. I spun, swinging in a quick combination of flashes. The blade held. Still, the structural integrity of it had to be crap. A good sword was essentially a somewhat flexible length of sharpened steel designed to slash and stab through objects with high resistance and would be sturdy enough to block a strike. A segmented sword, by definition, was hollow. If I tried to cut something, it would snap at the joints. If I tried to block, it might snap at the hilt. I manufactured some enthusiasm.
Awesome! Linus shook his head. You are a terrible liar. Sink some magic into it.
I relaxed my hold on my power and let it flow into the hilt. Faint, dark lines formed on the blade, growing into an intricate pattern of tiny arcane circles. What was this? Mages used arcane circles to supplement and channel their magic. Some circles amplified magic, others contained or shaped it. The most prominent families developed house spells, which unleashed catastrophic power and required circles of dazzling complexity. But all circles had to be drawn fresh with chalk or other organic substances like soap or wax. That's why I redrew the trap circles in our house every couple of weeks. I looked at Linus. He pointed at the box.
Hit it.
A sword wasn't an axe, and since this one was hollow, it would break. But he ordered me to hit it. I raised the blade and chopped down. The sword cut through the box like it was butter and sank into the desk. Crap. I reversed the swing, expecting resistance. There was none. The weapon came free, and if I hadn't gripped it tight, I would have flung it into the air. The momentum pitched me back, and I spun, bringing the sword in a wide arc around me, shut off the flow of magic, and stopped, blinking. Linus slow clapped. Holy shit.
How?
Linus chuckled.
Null space.
Some arcane circles required so much magic that their boundaries ceased to exist in our physical realm. It was a place where our reality touched the arcane. Nothing could penetrate it. A mage inside such a circle was invincible until his magic ran out, which would happen quite quickly. The very nature of such circles made them unsustainable long term. I don't understand.
I used an organometallic compound to embed the arcane lines. It contains a bond between metal and carbon atoms, which makes this particular substance suitable for magic channeling. Unfortunately, it's also sensitive to moisture and air, and you wouldn't believe the hoops I jumped through to modify it.
Oh my God. He'd just revolutionized the entire science of arcane metallurgy. If it ever got out, the line of people trying to kill me for this sword would stretch down the I-10 all the way to San Antonio.
Every time you feed it magic, the compound reacts. So in effect, you are redrawing the circles with every application. It remains to be seen how durable it is. Like I said, it's not perfect, but I'm not unhappy with it.
I choked on air.
This is an emergency blade, Linus said. Swing it long enough and it will drain you dry. You know what happens then.
First, I would see glowing dots, then the world would shrink, and if I kept going, I'd either pass out or die. I nodded. Linus Duncan fixed me with his hazel eyes.
Be careful, Catalina. The night is dark, and the wolves have vicious teeth. Guard yourself.
I will, I promised. Chapter 4. Outside, the sunset burned across the sky, orange and red against the encroaching darkness. The air had cooled enough to breathe, and the first bats streaked back and forth above the oaks bordering Linus's property. Alessandro was leaning against the spider, arms crossed, slouching slightly, a tired prince, waiting. Yeah, that didn't work on me anymore. I walked down the stairs to the driveway. He peeled himself from the car.
Let me take you home.
Pete, who would have been my ride, was still unconscious. I could call my family, but that would mean pulling them out of a secure base, and after today's fight, I couldn't bring myself to do it. My imagination painted Grandma Frida trying to drive Brick, her special armored monster of a vehicle, through a cloud of snakes with moth wings. No, thank you. I could call an Uber, but there was no telling who would respond to that request. The memory of Alessandro stalking me through MII popped into my head. It was a sad day when your safest way home was a rabid killer who broke your heart, and you were getting into his car to prove to yourself that you weren't a coward.
I need to go to Felix's house first.
I'll take you.
Thank you, Mr. Segredo.
He opened the front passenger door for me and I got in. The last time I was in this car, he had jumped over a gap in an overpass. On second thought, this was probably a different car. That spider had barely limped to our warehouse. He must have replaced it. He was wealthy enough to buy one of these every month in a different color.
Alessandro slid behind the wheel, and the engine came to life with a growl. I plugged the address into my phone. Same neighborhood as Linus, but it would take several minutes to get there.
Make a left out of the driveway. The spider glided forward, and we were off. I pulled out my phone and texted Byrne. Safe. Coming home soon. The next text message went to Patricia Taft, our head of security. ETA 45 min with count. Not hostile.
Understood.
I'm being targeted in connection with a case. Let's stay on lockdown.
Got it.
I didn't expect Alessandro to ever come back, but when we hired Patricia, she did a threat assessment based on past acquaintances, and Alessandro was at the top of her list. He and Augustine, whose moniker was Pancakes. After Alessandro left, I had spent some time researching the artisan, partially because Patricia requested all of the information I had so she could build his threat profile, and partially because I wanted to shut the lid on the pain of him leaving. I wanted to know all the terrible crap he had done, so I could move on. I found out very little, and what I did find was surprising. Alessandro was expensive and elusive. Hiring him required going through a specific intermediary. No other broker had access to him. Alessandro was the intermediary's only client, which suggested a trusted friend or a family member. Alessandro declined most jobs offered to him. I found one would-be client who unwisely left a comment on the wrong forum, thinking he would be anonymous. Byrne traced him and broke into his email server. The client had been a prime of a wealthy Brazilian house. He ranted to a family member about Alessandro's refusal to take the job because it didn't meet his criteria. I thought I would find a trail of blood and it would be easier to hate him.
Instead, I found questions. I pulled up my email and began going through my inbox. Riding in a car with him was a mistake. It reminded me of things I had desperately wanted. They had been in reach, so, so close. And then they were ripped away. I wasn't even angry anymore. I was just sad and tired. Alessandro glanced over at me again. He had been looking at me every minute or two. I looked directly at him. Yes? He kept his eyes on the road.
Just making sure you're really there.
Aha. Do you think I learned to teleport?
No. It's just for the first time in the last 6 months. I know exactly where you are.
He did not just go there. No need to worry. I won't jump out of the car. Make a right at the next crossroads, please. I went back to my phone. Seconds stretched. I had read this stupid email 3 times and I still didn't know what it said.
I'm sorry,
he said. If I could buy the power to teleport with 10 years of my life, I would do it in a heartbeat.
I'm sorry I treated you as an amateur. I'm sorry I tried to force you to abandon the investigation into the death of your friend's mother. I'm sorry for the things I said. I'm sorry I left. I'm sorry I didn't call.
An apology from Alessandro Sagredo. No dancing around. No excuses. No shifting the blame onto anyone else. A direct and firm admission of guilt. If I wasn't so busy trying to wrangle my emotions under control, I might die from shock. No need. What's done is done. Now we must work together, so let's clear the air. You were my first serious relationship. I had unrealistic expectations. It must have been very awkward for you. A muscle in his cheek jerked. I've moved on, so don't worry. Things won't become unpleasant. And I'd just lied through my teeth. Things were unpleasant as hell.
I never thought things were unpleasant.
Good. I'm glad it wasn't a total torture for you. Okay, that was petty, but he deserved it.
Catalina.
Miss Baylor, I corrected.
Catalina, he repeated.
His voice told me he wasn't going to budge on that point.
I'm sorry I hurt you.
I shut up. Nothing he said should have mattered, but it did, and I didn't know if I was mad at him or at myself. The spider whispered to a stop before a large Tudor. I keyed the code from Augustine's folder into the electronic lock. The gate slid aside, and Alessandro guided the spider down the long driveway to the door. Alessandro shut off the engine. We sat quietly in front of the dark building.
What are you thinking?
He asked. This is a dead man's house. Nobody's home. I dreaded this part. I had done it several times now, and it always left me hollow.
Let me help you, he said.
My objection to your presence was on purely professional grounds. You don't share information, Alessandro. I don't trust you. He didn't just not share, he actively hid information.
What do you want to know?
Let me make you a list. I went for the jugular. Why did you become the artisan? Silence. As expected, Mr. Ask Me Anything lost his tongue. Alessandro didn't answer any questions about himself, his family, or anything having to do with what he did or why he did it. And this was the most important one. He probably wasn't even capable of that kind of honesty. Telling people about yourself made you vulnerable, and he avoided vulnerabilities at all costs.
When I was 10 years old, A stranger murdered my father in front of me.
What?
I thought my father was the strongest man in the world. I'd watched him fight bigger men, scarier men, and he won every time. Important people came to the house and gave my father respect. He was invincible.
His face was completely flat, his voice devoid of any emotion, but his eyes boiled with magic. It splayed out of him, filling the vehicle, a violent, dangerous current.
I watched him die. The stranger had stabbed him. My father sagged on the ground by the killer's feet. He was trying to breathe, and bloody foam bubbled up from his mouth. I remember the fear in his eyes. I think he must have wondered if my mother and I would survive. My invincible father was dying. He was afraid. And I couldn't do anything.
There was an awful, raw sincerity in his voice, and it cut me like a knife.
There were hundreds of people around us, and none of them tried to help. They just watched. Like me.
Where did it happen? I asked softly.
At a wedding. My father was the best man.
My research into the family said his father had died, but no amount of online prying told me how. Now I knew. How horrifying it must have been for a young boy to stand there and watch his father bleed to death, surrounded by people, none of whom moved to help. How did they manage to hide it?
After the stranger killed my father, he walked by me, patted my shoulder, and said, "Sorry, kid. It's business."
Oh my God.
My grandfather explained it to me later. The groom was the intended target. My father had jumped in to save his best friend and died for it. And my grandfather spent years expounding on what an idiot my father was for putting his childhood friend's safety before the needs of his family. A man provides for his family first. Nothing else matters.
He turned to look at me. All of the rage against the killer and against his grandfather flooded his eyes. That's what people must have imagined Lucifer looked like. Beautiful, frightening, and full of fury. His magic twisted and convulsed through the car, sparking with deep amber.
Every person I ever eliminated was a murderer, or worked for one. I've spent the last 10 years trying to find the man who killed my father.
His voice was a ragged growl.
I found him. Now he wants to kill you.
Arkhan had murdered Alessandro's father. It explained so much. When he spoke of assassins, he barely managed to keep his hate under control, and I had never understood why. The database of professional killers who I thought were his rivals? They were his targets. That's why Runa's mother, an assassin, had hired him when she knew her life was in danger. It must have been known in their circles that the artisan was an assassin who killed other killers. He was their boogeyman. The silence lay heavy between us.
Is that why you left 6 months ago? I asked him.
To track Arkhan down? The rage in his eyes subsided. He seemed almost relaxed now. He'd ripped his biggest secret out and offered it to me. The effort must have drained him to nothing.
Yes.
They fought, and Alessandro lost. I sensed it the same way I sensed that his failure had seared him, tempering him like fire tempered a sword. He'd survived, but whatever he'd been through had burned off the veneer of playboy and Instagram idol. The artisan was in the driver's seat now.
I didn't get him, he said. I fucked that up too.
Oh, Alessandro. There was so much pain in those two sentences.
I won't let him hurt you.
His voice, so suffused with rage a moment ago, was ice cold now, measured and calm, and the determination in his eyes scared me more than his anger.
I'll kill anyone who tries to end your life. I'll answer any question you ask. I'll pay any price to keep you alive. Let me protect you.
His magic coiled around me, a current of warm sparks.
Say yes, Catalina.
My permission isn't necessary. Linus ordered me to work with you.
I don't care what Linus said. I know you. If you don't want to work with me, you'll find a way to not. I will protect you anyway, but if you're always trying to lose me, it will make things harder. We're so much stronger when we work together.
If only it was that easy. 6 months ago, just a glimpse of his grief and pain, and I would have fallen over myself to throw my arms around his neck and kiss him until the hurt inside him melted away. But I had learned that life was a vicious bitch, and people were complicated. They lied to themselves. Do you want to protect me because of me, or because it would throw a wrench into Archon's plans? He opened his mouth. Please don't answer, I told him. I have work to do now. I got out of the car. He followed. I walked up the brick steps, keyed the code into the lock, and opened the front door. The house stretched before us, cavernous and dark. Alessandro stepped around me, moving in that stalking, smooth way, raised his hand to the wall, and the lights came on. The house was white. White walls, white ceiling, white piano in the foyer on the ashy pine floor. It had a classic Texas layout, particular to executive-style homes, a grand foyer with vaulted ceilings that opened into the formal living room. A wall of windows directly opposite the front door offered the view of an infinity pool and a cabana bar illuminated by solar lights. On the right lay a formal dining room. On the left, an office waited. I turned left. The office was furnished in the traditional English study style. Ornate mahogany shelves that stretched from floor to ceiling, wood paneling on the walls between two oversized windows, a large Baroque desk, and a fireplace with a mantle of carved mahogany. An oil portrait of Lander Morton and a plump blonde woman, both in their 50s, hung above the mantle. The only modern touches were electronic. A thoroughly modern computer with a huge screen, a printer, and several digital frames displaying pictures of the kids. A teenage boy, around 14 or so, already echoing Felix in the build but not in his face, and two younger girls with long dark hair. Kids riding horses. Kids tubing on the river. Kids fishing in the ocean from a boat. I walked around the desk and sat in the chair. Two picture frames flanked the monitor. On the right, the kids again, looking crestfallen and wearing brand new school uniforms. On the left, a woman in her early 30s, slim, dark-haired, with olive skin and big brown eyes. Felix's wife and the children's mother. According to Augustine's dossier, she'd died 3 years ago. Rich or poor, mage or a dud, cancer didn't discriminate. I hated this part. Walking into someone else's life, cut so abruptly short. The signs of things left undone everywhere. Notes scribbled on a pad of paper. A cup of half-finished coffee that nobody remembered to take to wash in the torrent of shock and grief. We were trespassing, intruding on someone's private existence without their permission. I pushed the power button on the tower, and the computer came to life with a soft whir. I pulled a USB stick I had taken from Rhino before I got into the car with Pete out of my pocket, plugged it in,
and accessed the new drive. An icon of a heraldic shield with a styled B and S on it popped up. I clicked it and watched the program install. Alessandro drifted through the office, looking at the pictures, studying the book spines on the shelves, and eventually came to stand beside me. The installer finished. I pressed Windows and R. A run window popped up and I typed recent into it. A new window opened, presenting me with a list of recently accessed files.
"What are you looking for?"
he asked. "Anything that has to do with the pit." Felix was trying to keep what he found secret, so he likely saved it under some mundane name. I found the image from the file on the fourth try, saved as Sophia's dance recital. There were two others, one from a different angle, and a close-up, zooming in on the churning ring with the glowing bulb in it, all saved under innocuous names. I copied all three to the USB, right-clicked them one by one, selecting Add to Scrubber, and combed the computer for anything else related to the pit. There were three folders and a few dozen documents. I copied them to the USB, added them to the scrubber as well, clicked the shield icon on the desktop, and watched the list populate in the window.
"What is this?" Alessandro asked.
"Burned scrubber. It deletes the files and overwrites the disk space with random data over and over, making the files unrecoverable." He drifted to the other side of the desk and leaned against the bookshelves.
"Why are you doing this?"
"When your father died, did you search the internet for the man who killed him?"
"I did."
His expression turned grimmer. I nodded at the picture of the three teenagers. If my father was murdered, I would get on his computer and I would try to find out everything I could. What he was doing, where, why, with whom. The theft of the Osiris serum is a huge failure for the U.S. Assembly. They will do anything to erase the evidence of that failure.
"Including killing children?" he asked.
"I would like to think not, but I don't trust them enough to take that chance." The scrubber chewed through the files one by one. The silence was almost unbearable. He tore himself open for me, and I couldn't just ignore it. I had to clear the air. "Why do you care what happens to me, Alessandro?"
"Do you remember what you told me when I came to see you after the trials?"
he asked. "No, I didn't. I had rambled because I thought my magic had affected him and I'd panicked."
"You said, 'I want you to have a happy life. I want you to get to do all the things you want to do.' And then you went on about how your powers had scrambled my brain and you were so sorry, but it will wear off, I promise."
"All that?"
"Those were the highlights."
His magic coiled around him, a focused, dense current flashing with orange like a lethal serpent whose scales shimmered, catching some hidden light. Suddenly the office seemed too small and the distance between us non-existent.
"I want you to have a happy life, Catalina. I want you to get to do all the things you want to do. It's not everything I want, but it will have to be enough."
"Why?"
"Because you're the person I care about the most."
He had no idea how much that meant to me. Maybe. No. He left before. He would leave again. It had been so hard when he left. If I let myself care about him now, the next time he walked away would shatter me. I couldn't afford to be that hurt. I had to be sharp and capable. My family counted on me. Linus counted on me. I had to guard the people I loved from Victoria. I could never allow a repeat of what happened 18 months ago. And even if he meant every word he said, I wasn't free. Victoria Tremaine made sure of that. There would be no future for me and Alessandro. I had to pull myself together. The scrubber finished. I ordered it to uninstall itself and looked at him. What do you think your Uncle Lander wants? My voice was even. Grandma Victoria's lessons paying off.
Punishment.
I nodded. Lander wants to punish. Linus wants the serum. The National Assembly wants to keep it all quiet. Augustine wants his fee, and the Pitt Primes want their project reopened. I reached out and brushed the frame with the three children. I want to help them.
Noble. And foolish.
Says the man who ran into the building full of assassins to save a teenage kid. Ragnar Ederson still talks about how awesome you are. You have to be careful. If you show up unannounced when he is over at the house, he might faint. He didn't say anything. I'm not naive, Alessandro. Since you left, I've seen and done things I never thought myself capable of. I know what my role is now. When I take on a case, I do my best to make sure that people devastated by whatever fucked up mess I'm walking into can salvage some small part of their lives. I'm the mitigating factor.
The buffer.
His voice sounded bitter. Yes? What I do makes the world a little safer for my family. It makes a difference, and while it may not seem like much, to the people affected by it, my help is everything. These are the cards I was dealt, and I choose to play the game this way. I don't need a rescue or your protection. I took the USB, shut down the computer, and walked to the door. Behind me, Alessandro turned off the lights. We left the house as we found it, dark and devoid of warmth. We didn't speak on the way out of the subdivision. I should have never started this conversation. When I got into the car, I was okay. My emotions had taken a beating, but I was functional. Now?
Ask me something else,
he said.
Ask me any question. I'll answer.
He must have realized that information about himself was the only currency he had, and he was desperately trying to spend it. For some unknown reason, I was that important to him. He was waiting for my answer.
Stab him, Victoria's voice said in my head. Stab him now, right into his soul, while he's vulnerable, and slam this door shut forever. Do it before he hurts you again.
Victoria Tremaine's granddaughter would have done it. Should have done it. But I was Catalina Baylor. I couldn't hurt him. I felt like crying from the sheer strain of it. The truck in front of us slammed on the brakes. Alessandro braked hard, throwing an arm in front of me. I would treat this as a professional partnership. Linus ordered me to work with Alessandro, after all. I would do what I had to do, and I would never let Alessandro or anyone else know what it cost me. Marat's expecting me tomorrow at 10. Would you like to join me?
Yes,
he said. My family hates you. If they try to provoke you, don't injure them.
I won't,
he said. They don't know I am a deputy. They do know that I work for Linus and that my assignments are government-related and confidential. They know I can't refuse the jobs he gives me. They accept it, they help me, and they don't ask questions. Please don't put them in danger by saying too much. It didn't hurt that being a deputy warden paid exceptionally well. Linus had failed to mention that part when he deputized me. When the first wire had landed in our account, I'd almost had a heart attack.
I promise, he said.
Give me your number. He rattled it off and I added it to my contact list. He turned the corner. Our guardhouse swung into view, lit up by floodlights. Alessandro brought the spider to a smooth stop. He parked and moved to get out of the car. No need. I can open my own door.
Tomorrow, he said.
Yes. See you tomorrow. I got out of the car and headed to the guardhouse. I felt like I was bruised from the inside out. Things would be so easy if it wasn't for feelings.
Chapter 5. I walked to the window of the security booth and pressed my hand against the glass in the designated circle where small round holes had been drilled in the bulletproof glass. The tinted windows hid the two guards inside, and I felt slightly vulnerable.
"Password?" a clipped male voice demanded through the speaker.
"Manhunters from Venus."
Leon was in charge of the daily passphrases, and he'd been working his way through the Masters of Sword and Planet science fiction.
"Welcome home, Ms. Baylor."
"Thank you, Samir." Metal clanged and a section of the barrier slid down. I walked through the gap and up the street, to the 3-story brick building that served as our temporary base. When my father was dying of cancer, Mom sold our house to pay for his medical bills. Grandma Frida did the same, and we moved into a warehouse together, which we had split into an office, living space, and a motor pool for Grandma Frida's armored car and mobile artillery business. The warehouse was no more. 6 months ago, an assassin attacked us and I caught him in an arcane circle. The spell failed to contain our combined magic, and the overflow exploded our home. If I craned my neck, I could see the empty lot where it had stood, and the guilt bit at me every time. We had to stay somewhere, so Connor, who had bought up roughly 2 miles of real estate around the warehouse to keep Nevada and us safe when they were investigating the Sturm Charles conspiracy, sold us one of the larger buildings and the 3 structures around it for the princely sum of $1. We tried to reason with him, but he refused to name a reasonable price, and we needed a place to stay, so I said thank you and took it. It allowed us to concentrate on hiring a new security force and banking money for a new house. It also established a strong public link between our houses. When I had become the official head of the house after turning 21, I'd fought tooth and nail to keep our 2 houses separate in public view. I didn't want us to be seen as a vassal house to House Rogan. Now my priorities had changed. Once Victoria Tremaine took an interest in your life, nothing was the same. Leon's Shelby was in his parking space. The other 3 family cars occupied their spots as well, and a big silver Range Rover took up the visitor's spot. June, a compact white woman, leaned against the wall by the door. My older sister was in residence. June nodded at me. She was short, with broad shoulders and muscular arms that showed definition even when she relaxed. Her caramel hair was pulled back from her face into a short braid. She was Nevada's personal aegis, a shield mage. If someone shot at my sister, June's magic would block the projectiles. Asking her to come inside was pointless. She would guard the door no matter what anybody said. I nodded back at her, punched the code into the lock, and stepped inside. In its past life, this building served as an office, which worked for us on a business level, but wasn't great for our living arrangements. I walked past the receptionist counter, made a left, and headed down a long hallway to what was once the cafeteria and now was our kitchen. Ahead, bright electric lights and loud voices told me the family was up. Kind of late for dinner. A little black shadow padded out of the kitchen and streaked to me, her tail wagging so hard she nearly went airborne. I scooped my dog up. Shadow licked my face, her whole body wiggling. My chest tightened. Suddenly heat warmed the backs of my eyes. Noises drifted from the kitchen, excited chatter, the sound of forks and knives on plates, the clatter of glasses being picked up and set back down. The air smelled of spicy meat and baked taco shells. I hugged Shadow to me and stuck my face into her fur, trying to get myself under control. I couldn't walk in there crying. Leon said something I didn't catch. Grandma Frida laughed. It was fine. It had been a long day with many sharp turns, that was all.
I was just tired.
Shadow twisted around in my arms. Hot tongue brushed my cheek. The tight knot in my chest dissolved. I squeezed her to me and set her down on the floor. She wagged her tail. I didn't have to do anything to make my little black dog happy. I just had to come home. The urge to cry passed, and my brain woke up. I had things to do, and the first on that list was to verify what Alessandro had told me. He didn't lie to me. That kind of emotional storm would be impossible to fake. But I wanted to see things for myself. His father died at a wedding less than 20 years ago. Any wedding attended by a prime would be special enough to be filmed. I pulled out my phone and stepped into one of the front rooms that served as our office. Shadow bounded in after me. I shut the door and texted Bug. "Are you busy?" Bug worked as Connor and Nevada's surveillance specialist. A swarmer implanted with arcane magic, he processed visual information at superhuman speed. The phone chimed.
"Not particularly.
I need a quick search, and I don't want anyone to know."
"Shoot."
I paused, trying to organize my thoughts. Shadow made circles around my feet, sniffing at my borrowed shoes. "I need to know about a wedding. It took place 15 years ago, probably in Italy. The best man was Marcello Sagredo. I need to confirm he was murdered during this wedding. There might be a recording." My phone rang. I answered.
"Is he right there next to you?"
Bug roared into the phone.
"Is that spoiled money fucker in the room with you now, Catalina?"
"No, because he died 15 years ago."
"That's not who I mean, and you know it. He came back, didn't he? Let me guess. He's in trouble and he needs you to save him."
"No, he isn't in trouble, but I'm forced to work with him."
"Shit on a stick!"
"Bug, I don't have a choice. Can you do this for me or not?"
"Of course I'll do it. Here is my price. Next time you see him, I want you to tell him, 'Hey, dickfucker, Bug is watching you.' Because I am."
He hung up. "Well, that went well." Shadow stood up on her hind legs and leaned on my leg, looking up at me with big brown eyes. I petted her. "Let's go." I walked into the kitchen. The whole family had gathered around the oversized dining room table. Bern, my oldest cousin, big, broad-shouldered, with tousled hair that couldn't decide if it was light brown or dark blonde. Leon next to him, a sharp grin on his face. Arabella, looking surly, her long blonde hair curled into ringlets. On the other side of Bern, at the head of the table, Grandma Frida loaded her taco. Thin, bird-boned, with a halo of platinum curls and a hint of machine grease at her hairline, she saw me and winked. On her left, Mom scooped mango salsa onto her plate. Dark-haired and bronze-skinned, the only person in the family with darker skin than me, Mom used to be athletic and hard. During her last tour in the Balkans, she'd ended up as a POW. The experience robbed her of the full use of one of her legs. Even after two surgeries, her knee still hurt. Nevada sat next to Mom. She wore a pristine white dress with a boat neckline, three-quarter sleeves, and a knee-length paneled skirt that draped gracefully over her bump. Her hair framed her face in a sophisticated updo, and her makeup was perfectly done. She must have come from a business meeting. Nevada picked up a pickle, dipped it into honey, and stuck half of it into her mouth.
"Ew," Arabella said. "Someone take that away from her."
Nevada squinted at her. Most of the pregnancy books I read warned to expect mood swings in the last trimester. Nevada was 40 weeks pregnant and cool as a cucumber. She claimed she'd put on 40 pounds, which didn't slow her down any, and if she had mood swings, we sure as hell hadn't seen them. She was her calm, sometimes scary self, and the look she gave Arabella would have given the five primes I'd met today serious pause.
"Touch my pickles and die."
I took the chair next to Nevada. She reached over and patted my back. Leon must have brought everyone up to speed on our monster adventure and race to MII. Arabella squinted back.
You're almost 9 months pregnant. Shouldn't you be soft and happy and glowing? When are we going to see some glow?
Arabella clearly had a death wish. Nevada finished her pickle spear and licked honey off of her fingertips.
My back hurts. The kid inside me keeps kicking me in the kidneys. I have to pee every 5 minutes. My legs cramp, and I can't get out of bed by myself. I have to roll to the side, which is harder right now since my husband is somewhere in the Russian Imperium and he isn't there to steady me.
And how was your day of being young, beautiful, skinny, and carefree? Why aren't you glowing?
Arabella stuck her tongue out and turned back to her plate. Something was wrong. What happened? I asked her.
Nothing happened.
Something did. Arabella rolled her eyes.
I can't get any privacy in this family.
No, you can't.
What happened?
Some guy rear-ended me with his Tahoe on Wilcrest Drive.
The collective chewing stopped.
Are you okay? Nevada asked.
I'm okay. Baby is okay. He just bounced off my bumper.
Damn right he did,
Grandma Frida said between bites.
That's 7.5 millimeter ballistic steel.
Arabella loved her red Mercedes. We bought it for her used, and she had been in 3 accidents since getting her license. This made 4. After our warehouse was attacked by an elite mercenary team, Grandma Frida tried to convince her to switch to something more sensible, but my sister refused, since Grandma Frida's idea of sensible was a tank. Grandma settled for upgrading the Mercedes to VPAM 7 armor. She souped up the engine to compensate for the added weight, and now the Mercedes sounded like a pack of hungry lions.
What were you doing out on Wilcrest? Mom asked.
I wanted oyster nachos from Cajun Kitchen.
Nevada's eyes glazed over for a second.
Oh, that does sound good.
I'll get you some next time, Arabella said.
Leon dropped his fork on the table and shook his hands.
What happened with the accident?
Nothing happened. He got out of the car. I got out too. I was in a really good mood because I'd curled my hair and had a sundress on.
And that was my younger sister in a nutshell. Curling her hair and putting on a sundress meant the world was hers.
He came out, looked at his grill, and then he grabbed his hair and started screaming that it was an aftermarket grill. He accused me of driving my mom's car, not knowing how to drive, called me the C word, and his friends in the car laughed and pointed at me.
So he just screamed at you? Nevada leaned forward, her expression focused.
Pretty much.
And what did you do? Nevada asked. Arabella sighed.
You want to know what I did? Nothing. I stood there like a moron and let him scream at me. I don't even know why I did that. I'm not a pushover.
3 years ago, Arabella would have exploded. She would have changed shape right there in front of the Cajun Kitchen, stomped on that Tahoe, and rode it like a skateboard up and down the street. We had dodged a giant bullet.
What did the driver look like? I asked.
I don't know. I didn't look at him that well. Blonde, well-built, jock type, probably 25, 28, between 160 and 180 pounds, about 5'10", clean-shaven, black t-shirt with a gray outline of Texas on it, khaki cargo shorts, carrot-red Nikes with white laces, a fake Rolex, and not a good fake Rolex either. He was driving a black Chevy Tahoe, maybe 2012 or so, with a small dent in the bumper on the driver's side. There were 3 other people in the car.
Did you take a pic? I asked.
No,
Arabella squeezed out through clenched teeth.
Like I said, I stood there and let him yell at me. He didn't even give me his insurance. Since he kept screaming about his grill, I told him he could sell the knockoff Rolex he was wearing to pay for a new one. He started cussing, and I said that we needed to get the cops involved. Then he just drove off. It was a random thing. I don't want to talk about it anymore. We were talking about Nevada. When is Connor coming home?
Really? That was a low blow. A week ago, Connor got word that one of the soldiers he served with got himself entangled in a kidnapping in Russia. He was part of the rescue team, which hadn't come back to base. Alan was one of the 16 soldiers who made it out of the Belize jungle with Connor. My brother-in-law would do anything for them, but Nevada could be due any day, so he'd hesitated. And my pregnant sister practically pushed him into the plane to the Russian Imperium to go and rescue the rescue team. We hadn't heard anything since.
Arabella,
Mom said in her sergeant voice. Arabella looked at her plate.
You'll know when I know, Nevada said.
He'll handle it and come home.
Hart called, Mom said, keeping her voice casual. Suddenly, everybody decided that their food was fascinating, me included. The tacos were to die for. Hart was Rogan's second in command, in charge of the military operations conducted by Rogan's mercenaries. 6 months ago, Mom had called him for help. We couldn't afford him, but Hart dropped everything and came to protect us anyway. We paid for his protection. He'd quoted us a ridiculously low rate, but after his employment ended, he'd stuck around, reviving Rogan's old HQ across the street. He and his soldiers returned to it between jobs, which conveniently offered us additional security. Our own security chief, Patricia Taft, was now fully up to speed, leading a crew of new, hand-picked guards, but having Hart near made everyone feel better. Hart and Mom were meticulously polite with each other in public, but when Hart was in residence, there was always some reason for him to come over or for Mom to go over there. Something was happening between them, but it was fragile and tenuous, and all of us did our best to ignore it, afraid that if we looked too hard at it, it would disappear.
Oh? I asked. How is he doing?
He's fine. He said to say hello.
To the side, out of Mom's peripheral vision, Arabella wagged her eyebrows. I loaded another taco onto my plate. I was starving.
So, how's Linus?
Grandma Frida asked. Subtlety was Grandma Frida's middle name.
Good.
Is that the family we are now?
Leon asked dramatically.
The family where nobody talks about their things? Where everything is just good and fine?
Byrne reached over and tapped the back of Leon's head.
She isn't going to tell you about Linus. Stop already.
How's the fire tank coming along? I asked. Grandma Frida grunted. One of the local houses had bought a custom firefighting tank from the Russian Imperium. Vodoli 03 was a marvel of Russian engineering. It carried about 25,000 liters of various liquids and could spray them in different patterns. It could also take a hit from a high-explosive 155mm artillery shell and self-deploy 250 kilometers on a single tank of gas. But something had gone bonkers with its custom-built filtering system. Grandma Frida had been trying to coax it back to life for the last 3 days with no success.
That good, huh?
Mom said. Grandma Frida bristled.
Eat your food, Penelope.
We have a new case, I said. I told them about Felix's murder, omitting anything that had to do with wardens or the serum. Mom bit her lower lip.
There is a lot of money involved. This makes me nervous.
That's why we'll stay on lockdown, I said.
Arabella groaned. I ignored her. Let's divide and conquer. I have 4 suspects. Everybody gets one. I pointed at Arabella, Leon, and Byrne in turn. You get a prime, you get a prime, everybody gets a prime, and we all run an in-depth background check. Is that agreeable to everyone?
Yes, Byrne told me.
Leon nodded. Arabella rolled her eyes.
Work, work, work.
I tapped my phone, sending out the mass email I had written on the drive home.
Pick whoever you want except Tatiana Pierce. Cornelius wants that one.
Nevada frowned. I bet he does.
Arabella looked at her phone, jumped up, and ran out of the room. Grandma Frida blinked.
Like, what is even going on with that child?
My sister sprinted back into the kitchen, carrying a tablet. Her eyes were the size of saucers.
Hua Ling!
What? Mom asked.
He's the royal physician, the assassin, Hua Ling!
No way. Leon pivoted to her, his face concerned.
Is it drugs? You can tell me.
It's not drugs, I told him.
It's the legend of Han Min,
Grandma Frida said. Mom gave her an odd look.
What?
Grandma Frida asked her.
I watched a few episodes with them. There is action and the actors are very pretty. You should see the costumes.
It's a Chinese xianxia drama, I explained. It's high fantasy, set in a mystical land, a lot of martial arts and Chinese mythology. Han Min is a martial arts heroine who ends up in the Imperial Palace, and Hua Ling is a mystical alchemist who can cure any illness but is secretly an assassin trying to murder the Emperor.
That explains everything, Leon said.
Arabella marched over and stuck a tablet under his nose.
This is Hua Ling.
On the tablet, a startlingly beautiful man with a waterfall of dark hair sailed through the air swinging a sword. She flicked her fingers across the tablet.
This is Stephen Zhang.
A picture from Augustine's files showed Stephen in a suit.
See? Same person.
It did kind of look like Stephen. Leon flicked his finger back and forth, switching between the pictures, once, twice. Byrne took the tablet away from him, set the portraits side by side, and handed it back. Arabella tapped the tablet.
It's him. It's Cheng Feng.
I thought you said his name was Hua Ling, Nevada said.
The character's name is Hua Ling. The actor's name is Cheng Feng.
Arabella waved her arms in exasperation.
How are you not understanding this?
Do you understand this? Nevada asked me. I do, but I watch the show.
I'm telling you.
Arabella pounded her fist on the table for emphasis.
It's the same guy.
Even if he is, how is it relevant? Leon asked.
Because of this.
Arabella tapped her tablet. Hua Ling appeared on the screen, dressed in black and wearing a matching hooded cowl and a mask across the lower part of his face. He dashed across the double eave hip roof through the rain, leaped impossibly high, and flung raindrops at the soldiers in ancient Chinese armor below. The raindrops turned into blades and sliced through the soldiers like razor-sharp needles.
That's special effects, Leon said.
What if it isn't? Arabella asked. What if Catalina goes to see him and he turns her face into a pincushion?
You don't even know it's him. His face is covered. What you have here is some sort of Chinese ninja on a wire and lots of CGI.
Arabella grabbed a spoon and threw it at Leon. He caught it.
No violence, Byrne rumbled.
I glanced at Nevada. Could an aqua kinetic do this? In theory, she said. I never came across one who did. That's what I thought, too. Most of the aqua kinetics killed by drowning. It was faster and more efficient.
I'm taking Stephen Zhang,
Arabella announced.
Marat Kazarian,
Leon said.
Cheryl Castellano.
Byrne raised his finger. Okay, I said. My first interview is tomorrow at 10 with Kazarian.
Do you need backup?
Leon crunched his knuckles. I already have it.
Who?
Leon asked. Do it quick.